This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's another episode of Out of the Box, our ongoing series where we explore alternative ways to teach and learn, and which is done in collaboration with Anyaman Preschool. So in today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's a proponent of something I think most parents are dead against, something called risky play. Mariana has spent years researching this form of risky play, which is described as a thrilling and exciting play where children engage in risk without certainty. So Mariana joins me now all the way from Canada to discuss the proven immense benefits of risky play and whether we as a society have lost the sort of appropriate balance between keeping children healthy and active and protecting them from serious harm. Welcome, Mariana. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Julia. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. For our listeners, Mariana is joining us all the way from Canada today. You're 15 hours behind us. So Mariana, you know, you are an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital. You're also the director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. And I understand you're an injury prevention researcher, right? And you do research on why children should engage in risky play. I can again hear parents going, no. But why was this something that caught your interest and attention in the first place?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I think it's probably unusual for someone who's focused on injury prevention to be proposing that kids aren't taking enough risks. and where this came from, so my training is in developmental psychology, but I've been doing injury prevention research for, you know, about 20 years now. And so it was a bit of a mismatch between what injury prevention was proponing as the most important, which really was this idea that risk is bad. It's kind of equivalent to danger or hazard, rather than thinking about risk as something more neutral where you can have positive or negative outcomes. And when you think about it from a developmental psychology perspective, that perspective becomes even more important, because kids, as part of their development, need to be able to engage with risk and learn to manage risk. And so my interest in this field came really, it was gradual, because it was, first of all, kind of a back of the mind discomfort with the idea that risk was all bad, because I didn't really live my own life that way. And I don't think anybody really lives their life that way.
Yeah.
And then this was highlighted even more so when I had my own children and I started, you know, parenting, and I was also doing research on parenting and parents' risk perceptions. And parents were talking about, particularly fathers, were talking about the importance of kids engaging with risk and how they wanted to encourage, you know, play where the kids could do this. And I was like, So I did a bit more further reading, dug into Dr. Ellen Sandsetter's work in Norway and some of the other seminal work in the area, which was really just getting off the ground at that point, and realized that there was a problem in terms of how injury prevention was approaching this as such a black and white issue, mm-hmm. and that we needed to think about it in a much more nuanced way. And that kind of launched, you know, a whole field of inquiry, which got me to where I am now.
Okay. And you are a leading expert in this. I mean, you go, I think many people around the world talk to you about this because it's quite niche, I suppose. Am I correct in saying that? Not a lot. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to find out more. And as you mentioned, you know, you have a doctorate in developmental psychology and that you're concerned that, you know, we are keeping our kids too safe. Maybe you can help explain what actually happens when we prevent our kids from exploring all of these different uncertainties.
Yes, absolutely. And I think sometimes it's most helpful to think about this in the context of our own childhood play experiences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we've done a lot in our research and what I ask people to do often when I speak to them is think back to your favorite childhood play memory. And what did that look like? Where were you? Who were you with? What were you doing? And there's a lot of varieties in different countries and different cultures, but there's one thing that stands out very, very strongly, and that's the importance of outdoor play, right? So people talking about being outdoors and what that looks like and why that's so kind of important to them. And so when you start kind of digging into that, there's some key features that come out about that favorite play memory. there's a sense of joy and freedom and being able to move your body in ways that you can't indoors. You know, mm-hmm. nobody telling you be quiet or, you know, inside voices or no running or, you know, all of those limitations that we put on kids indoors disappear outdoors. As children have this increased sense of freedom, it's more likely that they can play kind of outside the view of adults, you know, so that they can have more independence and hang out with their friends and be able to figure out what they want to do and how they want to do it and take risks. You know, so many people talk about risk as being such a key part of that play. And so when we look at kind of these sense of, you know, what, why is this play so important? Why do people remember it so much? And we look at some of the key aspects of child development, they map on beautifully, actually. Mm. And so what that tells us is that indoor play is different from outdoor play. Outdoor play has some key aspects that are very important for child development. And so if you think about some of those characteristics of outdoor play, so it's like being outside and moving your body in ways that you don't indoors. And so kids are much more physically active mm-hmm. outdoors than they are indoors. They're learning how their body moves and how different things react to them, things like gravity or, you know, slippery surfaces or things like that. And so they're conducting experiments with the world and with their body. So they're learning, what am I capable of? What's my body capable of? What am I comfortable with? What happens when I do this or that or the other? And also things like, you know, sometimes when you're engaged in play, they can go really well or they can go not so well. And, you know, and stuff can happen that you didn't anticipate or that you didn't want to happen. But what they learn from that is that, oh, I can actually manage that. So I am capable of having, you know, trying these things, having them go badly, and yet I'm resilient enough to be able to manage that and deal with it and not necessarily need an adult to tell me what to do or how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you can put on all sorts of fancy names in terms of, you know, like executive functioning skills and socio-emotional learning and physical literacy and all of that. But if you just strip it down, I think it can be very intuitive for parents to think back to their own favorite child's play memories and what made those important and think what they got out of that. And then it's a really easy leap to, why is this so important for kids?
Mm-hmm. And I think kids then just sort of learn their own boundaries, isn't it? As you said, intuitively, they discover what they can and cannot do, what they should and should not do without us parents being there and telling them that and limiting them perhaps.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about like a child who's used to parents telling them what to do or how to do things is not going to develop those risk management skills for themselves, right? Because they're used to a parent's going to tell me how high is too high or what I can do or how I should do it and the steps that I should take. So that will affect their executive functioning, their goal attainment and being able to figure out how to do the steps to that goal. But also just how do I assess this situation mm-hmm. and figure out how to keep myself safe because I'm waiting for the adult in my life to tell me how to do that. Mm-hmm. And then you can also think about, you know, even adults with the best of intentions might say things like, be careful, watch out, you know. And what we're saying as parents and as adults is, I love you. I'm feeling anxious. I want you to be safe, you know, and I, you know, I'm expressing it with this very useless safety advice. So what the kids are hearing is you don't trust me to take care of myself. And also when you're saying something like be careful, which is so nonspecific, it's not like, you know, be careful because your head's about to hit a branch, you know, that's right above you or whatever, right? Yeah. That's something actionable you can do something about. But with be careful, it's like, what did I miss? What, you know, obviously I'm not doing a good enough job. So what do I need to pay attention to? And so it can undermine in ways that we don't even realize.
Okay. All right. I'm hearing myself in everything that you're saying. I'll just say that very vague, be careful. But, you know, even I catch myself like, what am I telling her to be careful about? But anyways, you know, when I was doing reading on this topic, I came across this thing about the distinction between hazard and risk in the injury prevention field. Now, something I never actually thought about. Maybe you can help outline those distinctions exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets back to what I said earlier in terms of, you know, risk had typically been equated to a hazard or a danger. Yeah. And what we're trying to do is kind of tease that apart. So a risk is something that kids can assess for themselves and can figure out for themselves what how to manage that and make a decision whether they want to engage in that, right? Mm-hmm. And that may require some adult assistance in terms of, you know, working together to manage something. But it's keeping the agency with the child and the child being able to figure it out for themselves. A hazard is something that either that, you know, is beyond the child's capability to manage, or doesn't really have any developmental opportunity, okay, usefulness. So to give you an example would be, like if you have, say, a broken slide or, you know, equipment that's not, you know, tethered into a ground appropriately, or you have strangulation hazard with, you know, a head getting stuck somewhere, you know, those sorts of things. There's certain developmental stages where kids might not be able to recognize that for themselves. And so we as adults have a really important role in helping kind of navigate the environment, think about some of the risks and hazards that are there and whether we need to control them and how we can, you know, work with the children to control them or take care of them beforehand.
Okay. All right. And has this sort of, I mean, you know, in this field, has there been like a confusion of risk and hazard, and has that perhaps made it more challenging to actually recognize the benefits of risk?
Yeah. So one of the very deliberate things that we did early on was, you know, even the title Risky Play, right? So some people call it adventurous play or challenging play or courageous play, or, you know, there's all sorts of names that you can come up with. And to be honest, I change my terminology depending on my audience, because I don't want to lose people too quickly. Some people, it's so anxious, you can't even have these conversations. So you got to start with like outdoor play. But we made a decision kind of about how we would approach it in the scientific literature, as well as some of the social marketing that we were doing at the population level, to really hammer home the word risk and risky play. And the reason behind that was because we wanted to make sure to start people understanding that risk is a neutral term. Mm. That it can have positive outcomes and it can have negative outcomes, but it's actually in and of itself something neutral. And we wanted to really get people to think, you know, when you use terms like outdoor play or adventurous play, it's really, yeah, everybody wants kids to have these experiences, but you don't directly address some of the challenges around, you know, once you actually see kids engaging in risk, all of the barriers that adults have in their own head and hearts around that. Yeah. And so by just putting that word out there directly and really forcing an examination of that word and an unpacking of that word, that we hoped to be able to put light on the word and change the conversation, basically.
Okay. All right. Let's just go for one quick break, Mariana. And when we come back, let's talk about some of the key factors of risky play. I'm speaking today to Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital, and she's also the director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. It's another episode of Out of the Box, and we're talking about risky play today. We'll have more after this quick break. You're listening to Out of the Box on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Out of the Box on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. This is, of course, our ongoing series where we explore alternative ways to teach and learn, done in collaboration with Anyaman Preschool. Today, we're looking at the concept of risky play, and helping me to understand more about this is Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital. She's also a director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. She's joining us all the way from Canada today. So, Mariana, I guess maybe for those who can't still quite picture it, right, what would you say are the key factors of risky play?
Well, you know, you mentioned off the top the definition of risky play, which comes from Dr. Ellen Sandsetter's research. And so it's thrilling and exciting play where children are engaged with uncertainty and there's a chance of physical injury. And so if I unpack that a bit for you, so the thrilling and exciting is kids pushing themselves beyond where they have been comfortable up till now. So it's that just kind of seeing that much farther what they're capable of. Kids often talk about a scary, funny feeling, a tickles in the tummy. So you have the fear and the excitement at the same time. Engaging with uncertainty, the second aspect of that definition, is also important because the point is that you don't know what's going to happen, right? It's an experiment. If you know what's going to happen, that's boring and that's not risky play. And the last part is a chance of physical injury. So anytime we're moving our bodies, we're going to have a chance of physical injury. Mm-hmm. And so some of the work that I do is to actually look at the injury statistics, because this is a very scary thing for adults and parents. And so I actually unpack the injury statistics to see how likely is it, you know, that you would have, in particular, like a serious injury and death. And in our investigation of that, it is very, very unlikely. So the leading cause of death in Canada for children is being a passenger in a motor vehicle. And so that, you know, it's about 200 times more likely to die from being a passenger in a motor vehicle than from, you know, anything related to play. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
We don't stop our children from going into an automobile, right? I mean, yeah, okay.
Exactly. In fact, sometimes we think we're keeping them safer because, okay, let's drive somewhere rather than walk because it's safer, right? Yet it's the most dangerous thing we can do.
Right. Sorry, I interrupted you. Sorry. Yeah.
No, no problem. So it's really important to understand that risky play looks different for different kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can't say, okay, this is what risky play looks like, and you know, the kids need to fit into that. It really has to come in from inside the child. So it's the child themselves figuring out what that looks like for them. Mm-hmm. And so you could have two kids that are the same age, but say they have different abilities, and one's very used to climbing, and so climbing a tree to the very top is fine for them, whereas another child is just going to go to the first branch and feel like, okay, I'm good, you know, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, just to give people a sense of what kinds of risky play there are, I mean, there's all sorts of kinds, but some of the things that have been outlined in the literature are things like climbing, you know, play at heights, so climbing trees, play at speed, so things like, you know, riding a bike really fast or game of tag. Play with dangerous tools. So, for example, if they're building something, they might have hammers or nails or whittling with a stick. Play near dangerous elements. So that could include, say, being near fire or cliffs or water. Rough and tumble play. So play fighting. Mm-hmm. And play where there's a chance of getting lost. So this is where kids are able, say, to wander the neighborhood without adult supervision, or in the case of younger kids, like really small kids, it might be even just being, say, on a playground where there's like hidey holes or bushes where they feel like, oh, I'm off by myself, or, you know, there's no adult watching me, right?
Okay. And again, you know, everything you're saying is scaring me, right? So I know I need to stop this. But what would you say are the developmental benefits of everything that you just outlined, you know, in terms of risky play?
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of getting back to what I talked about earlier in terms of think back to your favorite childhood play memory. I mean, there's lots of benefits. So the literature has been most clear on physical activity and physical literacy, right? Mm-hmm. So movement skills, right? Because you're able to do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do. And those are critical kind of throughout your lifespan. Yeah. You also have executive functioning skills, right? So to engage in play, you have to do some planning, right? You have to figure out what your goal is and the steps to attain those goals, right? And so you have the building of that kind of cognitive capacity for executive functioning. You have mental health benefits. And these are actually really interesting and quite vast because we're getting more and more research around this. So you have some of the first literature was looking at the effects of the development of phobias, right? So So across developmental stages, there's some kind of anxieties that come up for all children kind of naturally. They're evolutionarily advantageous. So to give you an example, separation anxiety, right? So kids at about 12 months, they really don't want to be away from their parents, right? Mm-hmm. And evolutionarily speaking, that makes a lot of sense because you want kids that small to be close to their parents. So if there's a danger, you can kind of scoop them up and get them out of that danger.
Sure.
But those fears are supposed to extinguish over time. And that would come with gradual exposure to trying that and seeing that, you know, the world doesn't fall in, right? So things like, you know, going at higher heights or being farther and farther away from our parents or whatever, those will extinguish those common phobias around, you know, separation anxiety, heights, water, et cetera. But if you don't have those experiences, the phobias get entrenched and then you have anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect of mental health is, you know, if you have children who are able to explore these kinds of things, these really challenging things and figure it out for themselves, it's also the sense of, I did it. I'm capable.
Sure.
You know, the self-confidence that comes with that. And then, you know, as I mentioned, if things go bad, it's also the sense of resilience around, I can manage that. And then also the fact that there is very strong emotions involved, like thrill, excitement, fear, you know, those are big, powerful emotions.
Okay.
And children need to be able to learn to manage those kinds of emotions without feeling kind of flooded or overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of play also offers them an opportunity to manage those kinds of emotions and develop that kind of the socio-emotional learning that really provides a really strong, important foundation as they go forward in life. And then you get the more basic stuff like risk management skills, right? So just here's a risk. I'm going to try a few different things. So it's just even doing those experiments with the world to see how it works. And then being able to translate those skills into other more dangerous situations. Because when you're engaged in play, it's not really that dangerous. But let's say you then have to cross a street, you know, and so it helps with building those risk management skills and the sense of, how to figure it out for themselves without relying on adults all the time. That's really important that they can then take on to other parts of their lives.
Okay. And I was reading that, you know, risky play can actually reduce injuries. Maybe you can help elaborate on that.
Yeah. And I think it relates to this latter point, right? If they're developing risk management skills and they're also conducting these experiments in a relatively safe environment, you know, so to give you an example, pavement is slippery when it's wet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to realize that kind of at a young age, let's say when you're running on slippery pavement and you fall, or you're on your bike and you fall, and where the stakes are much lower than when you're driving your first car and, you know, and you get into a much more serious situation.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of obvious things like that around, you know, how the environment works. But then there's also the ability to kind of make healthy decisions, right? So it's kind of like a muscle that you have to exercise. And if you have adults always making those decisions for you, you're not going to always be protected. So eventually the kids will grow up, they'll go off to university or they'll leave home. All of a sudden, there's no adult around to be making these decisions for them. They haven't been building that muscle over time. And here they are, all of a sudden, they have to do it for themselves.
Mm.
And the research is showing with kids who come from kind of overprotective parenting, that when they get into those situations, they don't have the skills to make those really critical decisions. Like things like drinking or drug use or sexual behavior or, you know, other health related decisions. And so it's, you have to build it over time. You have to think about it as kind of building a muscle that we're exercising over time.
I love that analogy. That makes perfect sense. You know, something that you are, that's going to help you ultimately in the future as well, right? And I think this ties also to something I was reading that you had written in a previous article, where you said that importantly, it's not up to parents or experts to decide what is risky play for a particular child. Maybe you can elaborate on that for our listeners.
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, in terms of when we're talking about the definition of risky play, we have a definition, but what it looks like, it can look very different, right? So kids have different comfort levels, different capabilities. And so it's really up to us to provide them with the physical and the mental space for them to figure this out for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not us saying, you know, too far, you know, slow down, get down, whatever, or not far enough, you got to push it further, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really us to say, here, you know, have at it. You know, here's a really exciting play area. Have at it. Figure it out for yourself, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it can look very different for different children.
Okay. So it goes both ways, right? You cannot set unnecessary limits, but you also shouldn't push them too far.
Exactly. Just let them figure it out for themselves. And what parents can do really is they can provide scaffolding, right? So what happens often is that parents either kind of prematurely stop the play, limit the play, or they might kind of take over the play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say kids are, you know, they want to build a den or something. And then the parents come in, they're like, oh, this is, I know how to do this. We're going to do it this way. Right. And they are then making decisions around the play. And then it's not child directed anymore. And then it's not play anymore. Right. But the parents can take their guidance from the kids, and the kids, like, they can help kind of scaffold that play. Let's say they're building a den, and the kids are asking, you know, specific guidance or questions, that the parents can support that, always taking the direction from the kids and what they want to do.
Okay. And I guess, you know, so our role is just to sort of be there. But how do we know when it's too risky? I mean, is there a way of telling that? Like, how much harm is too much harm? How much risk is too much risk? How can we play to remain safe as well?
Well, there's a couple of things I would say. Well, first of all, you can think about a risk-benefit assessment approach, right? Mm-hmm. So looking at kind of a play area from the perspective of what are the risks or hazards here, and do they actually need to be managed? But typically, you know, if we're talking about a playground or a play space, that's already been done. You know, parents, you know, unless there's, say, like discarded needles on the playground, you know, stuff that has emerged overnight, or, you know, there was a big storm and, you know, things look different than they usually do, and there's some, you know, maybe electrical wires that fell, that risk assessment has already been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so parents, like, don't need to worry about it. And I go back to the injury statistics, right? So we have in our heads these awful scenarios and stories that are playing out, and like the horrible things that are going to happen to our precious children. And like the statistics just don't bear that out.
Okay. All right. So trust in the science and just, you know, get rid of all those unnecessary fears that we have. But I imagine also a great problem here is, and I mentioned this as well, our fears, right? They tend to stand in the way. How can we try to stop that? You know, what are some methods that you have that you can help us with?
Yeah. And you know, I understand, you know, this is coming from a place of love for parents. Of course, we all want what's best for our children. And that's where this is coming from. So I totally understand and I sympathize with that. And it's really hard. But what we suggest for parents is really don't expect to go from 0 to 100 overnight, right? Mm-hmm. You have to think about this as a journey. And that it's a gradual, just like we talked about the building of the risk management muscle, it's a building of a muscle for parents as well, for them to do this kind of gradual release. And so they start small we suggest that parents set a very small, attainable first step on this journey that they could do today. That would then, you know, they do that one thing and they see the results of it and they just build on that and build on that and build on that. And that's important for the kids too, because, you know, for example, if we, let's say a parent who's never let their kid get anywhere on their own wants them to all of a sudden walk to school on their own. Hmm. Well, that's not safe, actually. Even if the journey is not that challenging, a child who has not had the opportunity to build those skills gradually, you know, they need to have that, you know, and so you want to kind of think about that kind of gradual release for both of you, right?
Right. Okay. All right. Let's just go for one more quick break, Mariana. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about some of the research that shows that children are actually capable of risky play. I'm speaking today to Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital and director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. It's another episode of Out of the Box, our ongoing series where we explore alternative ways to teach and learn. And today we're talking about risky play. We'll have more after this one more quick break. You're listening to Out of the Box on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Out of the Box on The Bigger Picture, our ongoing series where we explore alternative ways to teach and learn, and which is done in collaboration with Anyaman Preschool. Today joining me is Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital. She's also the director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. Her research is on injury prevention, but she also advocates that children should engage in risky play, as she's been explaining to us, you know, throughout this interview. So we're talking about risky play, of course. So, you know, before the break, Mariana, we were talking about, our role as parents, right? I mean, sort of like getting rid of our fears to help encourage risky play. I was reading that you advocate for something called the 17-second rule. Can you tell me what that's about?
Yeah, this is an example of something that we recommend to parents as kind of a potential first step, right, in their journey. So the 17-second rule is that kind of the next time you want to say, be careful or stop or get down, you know, that you actually count to 17. And that would then give you some time to really think about the situation, to allow your child some time to show you that, you know, their capabilities and that they're figuring things out for themselves, mm-hmm. For you to process, like, do I really need to worry in this situation? What's the worst that can happen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And for you to realize what negative effects might come from you interrupting that play, right? Okay. So it just kind of gives that kind of pause to really see, well, are they in mortal danger? You know, is in a situation of life and limb? And if not, maybe I can just kind of step back and let it play itself out.
Okay, I'm so curious, why 17 seconds though? How did you come to 17 seconds?
Well, you know, you'd think there was some big science behind it, but it actually comes from a head teacher in England who did this on her playground, uh-huh. and, you know, had tried a few different things, and just that 17 seconds seemed to be the sweet spot.
Okay, I've got to try this today at the playground. And of course, there is research which actually shows that children are inherently capable of risky play, despite what we parents might think. Maybe you can help elaborate on that.
So I guess that where I would go is the whole term risky play didn't exist until about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Why didn't it exist? Because it didn't need to. Because play was just play. Right. And play included risk. And so, you know, kids would just go and play, and it's, you know, and sometimes that play included risk taking, right? So what I would say to that, kids are inherently capable of play. Therefore, they're inherently capable of risky play.
Okay. Yes, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, you've also written before, and I love this quote, if in doubt, let them out. It's their right. Maybe we can talk a little bit about outdoor play. What are the benefits, particularly of being outdoors, particularly in nature? And of course, this is after 2 years of the pandemic where we had so many lockdowns and we've seen the effects on children, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. So I talked earlier about kind of our favorite play memories generally being outdoors and mm-hmm. some of the benefits, like how outdoor play is different from indoor play. And so there's that opportunity for physical activity that's much more apparent than indoor play, moving our bodies in different ways and so on. But even if you think about like the indoors is static, right? It's going to look the same every day, mm-hmm. but you go outside and it's constantly changing. You know, you have different weather, different seasons, you know, it's much more vast. So you can go and discover new things all the time, nature and creatures that are showing up. And so that there's a lot more sense of kind of challenge and change and possibility, mystery. And those are really important in terms of, the affordances they allow for really interesting play opportunities for kids. And then with respect to nature, the research just gets bigger and bigger and bigger around the importance of exposure to nature for all of our health and well-being. Sure. And so we've seen the research with all ages, right? And I don't think it's hard when you think back to kind of a time when you've gone out to be in nature, and it doesn't even have to be a forest. It could even be just looking at a flower, you know, in garden or even in a flower pot. Just this sense that come, you know, of just like kind of an emotional release, a decompression, a sense of our kind of attention perking up, and a feeling of just kind of greater peacefulness. And so being connected to the outdoors, being connected to nature is a really important part of daily life for all of us. Not to mention to engender a gratitude for our ecology, mm-hmm. for the world, for why it's so important for us to be stewards of this planet and make sure that it's available for subsequent generations.
Mm-hmm. And we know that that's been lost, especially now with so many gadgets and, you know, all the games that you play. And we're quite, you know, I speak to a lot of ecologists on some of the shows that I produce, and they're saying that connection with nature is lost. This is a great way to help nurture that, isn't it? And, you know, so for parents who, it sounds like we have a lot of unlearning to do with regard to risky play. I understand that your lab has actually developed an online tool, which is called Outside Play, for parents struggling to strike that balance when it comes to risky play. How can we all use this?
Yeah, well, it's available online at any time. So you can go to outsideplay.ca. And there's two tools on there, one for parents and one for early childhood educators. And now we're working on a tool for teachers as well. So, you know, at some point in the next year, there'll be three on there. Okay. But yeah, you just go to the page, and it's really meant to take parents through some self-reflection exercises, you know, in terms of thinking more deeply around, you know, what they want for their child and some of the barriers that get in their way and why they get in their way and how they can think differently. And then, you know, thinking about, as I said, the one simple step that can start them on this journey. So yeah, anybody can access it anytime, outsideplay.ca. We've done full randomized control trials on all the tools, and they're effective. They work.
Okay, I'm definitely going to try that out. Thank you so much for joining me today, Mariana. Before I let you go, any last message on why we should encourage more risky play for our kids?
The benefits to children of this kind of play are vast, and the risks are so low, really, that we really need to think about the bigger picture in terms of what do we want for our children? How do we want them to grow up? What kinds of futures do we want to see for our societies? And allowing this kind of play and these kinds of experiences are really important for creating a society of resilient, self-confident, creative adults.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. I've been speaking to Dr. Mariana Brusoni. She's an investigator at the British Columbia Children's Hospital and director of the Human Early Learning Partnership at the University of British Columbia. We were talking about risky play. Again, if you'd like to find out more about the online tool that Dr. Mariana's lab has developed, just head to outsideplay.ca. And if you'd like to find out more about her work, just head to brusonilab.ca. That's BRUSSONILAB. bfm.ca. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Out of the Box on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.